All right, so I'm Casey Ullenhoot. I'm a program manager on the .NET and Visual Studio team at Microsoft. And I'm here today to talk to you about C# and VB code-focused development in Visual Studio 2015, as well as in the next version. And we'll also cover what's in C# 6 and VB 14, as well as what's in C# 7 and VB 15. I'm also joined here today by my two coworkers who also work on .NET and Visual Studio with me. They are Jared Parsons, who is a principal. Stand up. Principal developer lead on the compilers team for C# and Visual Basic. He's also on the C# language design committee. And then we have Ravi Chande, who works on, he's a software engineer. He works on all the cool refactorings you're going to see and stuff like that. And so if you have any questions after this talk and I can't get to it, we are going to be at the .NET and languages booth in the exhibit hall down there. And so just come find us and we're here to answer all your questions. All right, so again, today, the first thing I'm gonna talk about is what is Roslyn and what does it bring to Visual Studio 2015? And then we're gonna talk about how Roslyn really enhances developer productivity and how it basically allows us to evolve our language faster with C# 6, C# 7, VB 14, VB 15. And then we're gonna like end the talk with some foundational stuff, how we're working to improve performance in Visual Studio 2015 and Visual Studio Next. Does that sound good?
Yes.
All right. So Visual Studio 2015 is exciting because it ships something new, which is called Roslyn. So for those of you who don't know what Roslyn is, it's the name of the project where we basically re-architected the C# and Visual Basic compiler from native code into managed code. And there are basically two reasons why we did this. And it took about, I think, 7 or 8 years for us to actually complete it, which we did complete in Visual Studio 2015. But we did this so that we could write new features faster. And by features, I mean new language features as well as new IDE features. So for example, C# 6 came out a year ago, and now the next year is upon us, and C# 7 is already ready to go. And then we also re-architected the whole compiler because now we provided an open source API surface on top of the compiler, which allows anyone in the community to write a like smart code-focused tool or technology on top of the compiler. So we've seen so many cool things come out in the community where people are like writing interactive windows on top of Roslyn, or writing scripting engines and stuff like that, all because we open sourced and made this API service on top of Roslyn. So for the remainder of talk, I'm just gonna literally talk about the power of Roslyn and how it can make you productive in Visual Studio 2015, as well as Visual Studio 15. And Visual Studio 15 is the next version of Visual Studio. It's the code name, and it sounds way too similar to Visual Studio 2015. So for the purpose of this talk, to mitigate all confusion, I'm just going to call it Visual Studio Next. So are you all on board with that? So the next version of Visual Studio is Visual Studio Next. The one that came out last year is Visual Studio 2015. All right, so as part of my job as a PM on the productivity tooling, I talk to a lot of developers and a lot of developer leads. I watch them code, I talk to them on the phone, I go to their workplace and talk to all of them. And as a result, when I was asking them, like, what are you looking for in productivity tooling? These are the five main things they always say that they're looking for. So refactoring support, navigation and search, style enforcement, better IntelliSense, and testing. Does that resonate with you all as well out there? All right, so that's what people are looking for in productivity. So without further ado, let's kill the slides and look at some productivity features in Visual Studio 2015 and Visual Studio Next. So here, I just have a super simple program. I have a base class person, I have a student and a teacher that implement it, and I have one method that basically just goes through, sees if the person is a student. If they are, they print the grades. If they're a teacher, they print the subject. If they're a person, they just print the name. And at the bottom, I have just a test class that has a couple tests. And you can see one of them is failing, which is like so bummer. And so I was like, why is this failing? I'm expecting it to print Willow 4.0. I have Willow 4.0 here. And if I actually go to definition on my method, I can see for an honor student, I'm just printing the name and GPA. So why isn't this working? Well, we can use a feature that came out in Visual Studio 2015 Update 1, which is called the interactive window. And the interactive window is essentially a REPL, or a read, eval, print loop, which lets you type any expression you want in C#, and you click enter, and it's going to evaluate it. So for instance, I could do, let's see, Well, so the canonical example is to do 2 + 2 to show it's like the world's most glorified calculator. But I can also do, you can see I'm getting IntelliSense in here, so it's a little better than a standard REPL you might use, but I can do, I don't know, hello MS Ignite 2016, and it's just gonna print it out. So that came out in update 1. It lets you play with APIs, it lets you explore new language features if you wanted, but what we added in update 2 to make it more powerful was we added this thing called Initialize Interactive with Project. And what this is gonna do, it's gonna let you basically add a reference to your program that you wrote and seed it as the context to your interactive window. So if I do this, we can see it's adding all these references to my project. And then now I can directly start playing with things that are in here. Let me full screen this. Oh, no, full screen's gonna kill the interactive window. All right, can you see this kind of? All right, so what I'm also gonna add in here is I'm going to use a C# 6 language feature real quick, which I will talk about later, where I'm going to make it so I don't have to fully qualify everything that's in my program 123 class right here. So now I can just directly call printed form and all my classes. So now, for example, I can make a new person. You can see it shows up in IntelliSense. I'm gonna call her Casey. What a great name. And then, for example, I can just call this here. So now I can interact with all these elements that are in my program in the interactive window. And this was added in Visual Studio 2015 Update 2. So what's wrong with my test here? Or what's wrong with my code? So I can now, also in Update 2, I can send code snippets from the editor to be executed in this interactive window. So if I click Control-EE, you can see it now put this person's array over here. And now I can just start playing with it. So if I just write a simple for each, where I go over, oops, every person in persons, and then now I print it all out. So I'm gonna call that printed form method. Again, I don't have to qualify it because I use that using static. Then I can see, oh, ho, ho, I'm printing 4 instead of 4.0. And so if I go back up to my code up here, I can see it's just a formatting issue, and so I just need to add a formatter up here. And so this is a sneak peek into string interpolation, which again is C# 6 feature, which I'll show you later. But now, if I resubmit this using Control-EE and use Alt-Up to access my REPL history, I can now reprint this and see that correctly prints Honor Student Willow 4.0. Yeah. Can you talk into the mic? Thanks. Oh, can you turn the mic on, Stacy, please? Sorry. Oh, yeah, I'll just repeat it. Just ask.
Okay.
It.
When you were making a for each loop, you pressed Enter. How did the console know the difference between entering a command and a new line of code?
Right. So if you are, so the question was, how when I was in this for each, did it know when I clicked enter here to actually evaluate it as opposed to add a new line? And I actually kind of cheated. So we have a command where if you are not at the end of an expression, if you click control enter, it'll force execution no matter where your character is. So my caret is in the middle, so if I do control enter, it'll evaluate. Otherwise, if I'm down here, or in the middle here, and I click enter, it'll make a new line. Yeah, good catch. and so now, I can run the test if you want to prove that it worked, but like we don't really need to because we already showed it in the interactive window. Cool, so that was the interactive window. It came out in update 1, it had improvements in update 2 where you could send the snippet from the editor to be executed in the interactive window and allowed you to see the interactive window with your project context. So that's something that came in Visual Studio 2015 update 1, pretty cool. But the other thing that came out in update 1 that is probably people's favorite feature is something that they've been asking for a long time, which I'll make this full screen now, which is go to implementation. So oftentimes if you wanted to find the various implementations of a base class, or base member or type, you would have to find all references and you would search this like plain text results to try to figure out which ones were the implementations. But now, so we can see I'm on this base class person. I can just go, we actually added this command, go to implementation, gave it a keyboard shortcut, so it's part of the F12 family. And now I get this results window that's gonna show me the various implementations. So you can see here, person, student, and teacher are all implementations of person. And you can navigate between all of them with F8. So if I pull this down, this is a little trick if you don't know this already. If you do F8, it'll navigate through all of them. So you can see that's jumping through all the results. And you can do this on like every single window we have that's a results window. F8 will just take you to the next one. If you only have one implementation, we will just navigate you directly to that file as well instead of bringing up the results window. So that's an improvement to a navigation that we made in Visual Studio 2015 Update 1. In Visual Studio Next, we've gone to the next level with navigation. So as I was talking about with Find All References, how you get that like plain text, kind of like boring list that you have no idea how to like search through that. Well, we've now improved that dramatically. So now, if you go to Find All References, you're gonna see something that looks like this. So thanks to Roslyn, we can now very easily basically do all the syntax coloring and highlighting inside of this Find All References window. So now it's gonna look exactly like it does in your code. And almost as like a vanity feature to show like how powerful Roslyn is, our developer basically made it so you can get context of all the references in your code when you hover over them. So you can see what lines are immediately above and below each reference when you hover over them. You can also, if you want, sort now, because a lot of people are like, oh, you just spit out every result and there's no hierarchy here or anything. So we now made it so you can group it however you want. So you can group by definition only, you can group it by project, you can group it by project and path. And so there's all these different ways now that you can organize your results and Find All References to make it better for you. If you're paying close attention, you might have also noticed that there are VB references in here. And so actually in Visual Studio 2015, as a result of Roslyn, we now have this seamless experience, like tooling experience between C# and Visual Basic. So if you go to definition on something that's defined in VB but used in C#, we'll immediately take you to that file if it's in the same solution. And so you just have this seamless tooling experience between the two languages that you didn't have before Visual Studio 2015. So that was something that we've done to improve Find All References. The other big navigation thing that we've done in Visual Studio Next is something called Go To. So it used to be called Navigate To. Did any of you ever use Navigate To? It was like Control Comma. Yeah, I know my coworkers use it. All right, so we've now decided to rename Navigate to Go To because we talked to a lot of customers and they said they didn't know what Navigate To did. So we renamed it to Go To. And now we also made the keyboard shortcut. You can access it through Control Comma or Control T. And now you can see up here, you can navigate to any file type member or symbol directly from this. So for example, I can type in light, and if we look up here, we can see that we have types showing up in here, members, file names, etc. So by default, Control T is gonna show all of these different results. But what we can do is if you look at the bottom, so I can actually draw this to your attention, literally. You can see that there are icons down here that you can filter your results by. And so we can filter this one's by file, type, symbol, member. And you can hover over them. I don't know if you can see here, but if you hover over them, they actually tell you what they are. And so if I only want to see files, I can now only see files. If I only want to see symbols, I can now only see symbols, et cetera. And we also have keyboard shortcuts for all of these, which you can find in the Go To menu. So if you go up here, you can see you can go to line, go to everything, which is the default, go to file type, member, symbol. And so a lot of people say this is a feature, if they knew about, they would use all the time because they use various third-party extensions to get this feature themselves. Cool. Are we all on board so far? Oops. Okay. Now, if you're paying super close attention, and hopefully you can see it on this file with the projection, you can see that there are these dotted vertical lines in the editor. Can you all see those? All right, so that is something called indent guides. So if you use productivity power tools, you probably have been used to this feature, but now we finally built it in Visual Studio Next. And so what this allows you to do, it just like matches up your braces so you can see the different code blocks that are happening. But also what you can do is say, you see this bottom brace, you can hover over it and see what the top brace is. And because of Roslyn, we can just add in the extra thing to make it pretty by just colorizing this tooltip, because why not? And then you can hover over this and see that this is part of the namespace person demo. If you need more context, you can hover over the actual indent guide and get like a whole chunk of what's in the top brace. So you never have to scroll or anything to get this context that you need. So that's the last kind of navigation-like feature that we've put in Visual Studio Next so far. So now let's look into editing. Oh wait, but first, if you are, wait, there's more. No, if you are a WPFer or you use WPF a lot, I think this feature is the most helpful with reading XAML. So now like your XAML tags kind of make a little more sense if you look in this. So you can like see, oh, this data grid column, you can like clearly with your eye see where the tags are lining up. So that's where I personally like this feature the best. All right, so let's get into editing code. So here's a WPF app. It's really simple. It's basically just going through to our Roslyn repository using the OctaKit API, and it's just pulling down all the people who have contributed code in the last 30 days or issues, and then just prints them all out, and then you can like filter them in the WPF app. And so you might have noticed when I was typing in the interactive window that IntelliSense might have looked a little different. And again, I'm going to draw your attention to the bottom here, where there are now this tray of icons at the bottom of IntelliSense. And this is IntelliSense filtering that we've added. So now, if you're working in a huge solution that has tons of different types and members, or you're working in an unknown solution where you don't really know what you're looking for, or if you're working in WPF, where you just want to see the events that are available to you, this is where IntelliSense filtering can come in handy. So for example, if I'm here, and I only want to see the events, I can just click this events, and now I'm only going to see the events that are available here. Or if I only want to see the properties, I can see only the properties here. And all of these have keyboard shortcuts available to them if you are a keyboard user, not a mouse user. If you hover over, let me zoom in for you. Oh, nope. Let me zoom in here. And you can see that Alt-P, for example, is how you filter to only properties. And they're all pretty intuitive, like filtering by methods is Alt-M and stuff like that. So if you are a keyboard user, this is an easy way to quickly filter out by things you need. And if you forget the keyboard shortcut, you can just hover over the icon. So that's something we've done with IntelliSense. We've made IntelliSense smarter. We've made it smarter by now we're going to pre-select more often the type that you want. The way that we do this is that we're actually pre-selecting based off the target type of where your position is. It's not super worth showing, but you'll just notice more often that IntelliSense is pre-selecting the thing you want, which who doesn't want that? All right, so that was some editing. Now, if we take a step back and look at this file, you might notice that there's a lot of like a gray-looking code going on up here. And you're like, what is that? And so this is something else that Roslyn has let us do, where we're doing live code analysis on your code. And so basically what this allows us to do is we're going to live, before you compile or build, tell you where you're going to have errors, warnings, unused code. We're going to give you suggestions. We're going to offer you refactorings. And this is all because of Roslyn. It's because Roslyn has this deep knowledge of how the language works and what you're trying to do. And so the main interaction model we have here is that, for example, faded out code means it's unnecessary. So you have all these usings up here, and it turns out, if we zoom in here, it's telling us that the using directive is unnecessary. So if you hover, it's going to tell you why it's faded, and you're going to find out it's because it's unnecessary. You might also see that there is a light bulb here, and this light bulb is signaling where there's a fix available. So it means we will actually fix this code for you. So, and it can be triggered using control dot. Control dot is like your best friend now in Visual Studio 2015 and above. So if I do this, again, an almost another vanity feature because of Roslyn, we can actually generate a live code diff preview of what this change is going to do to your code. It's like, oh, I don't know if I want to do this fix or if it does what I want. Instead of having to commit it and then undo it, we're just going to actually show you what is going to happen. So again, like red is things that are going to disappear, green are things that are going to add. If it's just white, it stays the same. And so you can see here, remove unnecessary usings is going to remove all of these usings that are unused, just like we expect. So let's just do it. Oh, and the other thing here is, say you want to do this everywhere. You can go to the bottom, and you can see you can do this for all occurrences in the document, project, or solution. So if you have unused usings everywhere in your solution, and you don't want to go to every single file and remove them, you can just do it in one click here. So I'm just going to do it. Voila. All my unused usings are gone. So let's look at some more refactorings. Why not? Yes. Does it also remove the DLL references? No. All right. More refactorings. All right, so here I am in GitHub stuff. I'm really good at naming things, clearly. And so here I'm getting all the pull requests that I want from the Roslyn repository. And it's kind of hard to read because this query is kind of crazy looking. So I'm just going to select this and extract it into its own method. So again, all I did was I selected the code snippet and I clicked Control Dot, which is your one-stop shop for everything. And again, you can see a live code preview of what's going to happen. So the new method that you're creating is that big green chunk. The stuff that you're moving is the big red chunk. And you can see that we're giving it a dummy name of new method. But luckily, when we commit this, we automatically drop you into a rename session so you can just rename this method whatever actually fits it. So we're just going to call it a PR query method. And voila, I've extracted a method right here, and then it already updated my call to call it here. And now, if I look above this, I can see filter only seems to be used once, and I can confirm this by doing find all references, and sure enough, it's only used in those two cases. So if I do control dot, I can see that I can now inline the temporary variable. So again, you can see in the code preview that it's going to just inline this thing. Let's click enter, and voila, we inline the temporary variable just using control dot, one click. And say we're like, oh no, that was terrible. It made this code line too long. Then we can just select the expression. Again, just press control dot, and now it's going to offer to introduce a local for us. So we just introduce the local. Again, puts this in a rename session, so I don't want pull request to be my type name, so I can just call it filter. And then the last thing that people like to do a lot in terms of refactorings is change the method signature. So say that I actually want, and this method I just extracted, I want to be able to have the filter be the first argument. So again, just stick my cursor in the signature of the method, press control dot. I can now go to change signature. I can select filter, move it to the top of the parameter list, click OK. And again, we were able to smartly fix where this was everywhere. So even in our method call, we now switch all the parameters for you. So you don't have to go anywhere and check this. We just do it for you automatically. Great. So all the refactorings you just saw, remove unnecessary usings, extract method, inline temporary variable, introduce variable, and change method signature are all available in Visual Studio 2015. So all of those are in 2015 RTM you can use today. Let's look at now a refactoring that came out over the updates in Visual Studio 2015. So if you all didn't notice or like weren't following along, which is totally fine, every update of Visual Studio, we're like adding incremental new value. So basically, every update, we've added new refactorings. And if you've been following the previews for Visual Studio Next, every preview has added a ton of new refactorings. So one of the ones in here, how many of us type really fast, and then we do something like this? So instead of client, we now have this thing called like client or something. And you're like, oh. If only Visual Studio were smart enough to just have a spell checker. I mean, come on, you own Microsoft Word. If only we could fix this. So luckily, and I believe update 2, I think it was update 2 or update 3, I can't remember, we made it so now we will actually fix this for you. We'll notice that you probably meant to use client here instead of client or whatever, and we will fix it for you. Another thing we did is, say I have all this pull request data now and I actually want to convert it, I want to like serialize it, for example. So I want to use NewtonSoft to do this. So say I type like JToken in here. I'm like, did I not install this? Well, I didn't, and I don't really need to worry about it anymore because as part of a quick fix that we do, we're going to offer to, we're going to recognize, first of all, that this type comes from NuGet. We're going to be like, hey, let's install, find and install the latest version of this on NuGet for you. And then we're going to add the reference for you and fix the typo I had in here. Great. And so this is something we added again in Visual Studio 2015 update 2 or 3, can't remember which one. But yeah, and so that's another just incremental value feature add that we added. So great. Any questions so far on refactorings? Okay. Let's go into refactorings that are in Visual Studio next then, because why not? All right, so how many of you are like me here, and you put all your classes into one file when you're first writing? And then eventually you're like, oh, it's probably good practice to like pull those out into their own files. Anyone? Does no one do that? Okay, we got a couple. All right. I was like, I can't be alone here, guys. Don't leave me alone. All right, so. What we can do now in Visual Studio Next is we have people say, like, this is a workflow that they have, and it's super painful to go to Solution Explorer, add new, cut, paste, code everywhere. So now what we're going to do is actually move the type to file for you. So if I zoom in here, you can see that this is pull request contribution, and we're going to move it to a file with the exact same name. And so I can just quickly do that. Boom. Do it to the next one. Boom. Two clicks. Have them all in their own file. And so if I get out of full screen mode and go over here, you can now see that both, you can see, oh, well, pull request contribution is here and issue contribution is here, exactly where I pulled them out to be. So that is something that came out. And then let's say something happens where I'm copy-pasting code a lot and something happens and, you know, all of a sudden, my class and my file name have gone out of sync. So I have contributions, yes, is the name of this file, but my class in here is contrib. So instead of having to go through and rename this and all that stuff, from the editor, you can now just click control dot, and we're going to offer you two options. We're going to offer to either rename the file to contrib to match the class name, or we're going to rename the type to contribution to make them sync. And so this is a feature a lot of people asked for, and here it is. So now I can just rename it to contribution, and we're all good. All right, so that was all the refactorings that we've added. Do we have any questions so far? Yeah?
Is that case-sensitive?
Is it case-sensitive? What do you mean? Like, so if this is lowercase? Let's try it out. Rename file to lowercase contribution. There you go. It's case sensitive.
ReSharper doesn't do that.
ReSharper doesn't do that. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. What was that? Yes. The question was, will it also update all the drive classes at the same time? And the answer is yes. So I can like show you, find all references on this. Shift F12. You can see there's 11. And then let's rename it to lowercase. And then let's fix it. And now let's go back. Oh, we still have 11. Yay. Okay, so didn't mess up anything. Exactly like you expected. So that was a bunch of refactorings. Let me see if I missed anything. Oh, cool. So the other thing that we've done that may be helpful to you guys is, let's go to GitHub stuff. All right, how many of you were paying super, super close attention so far? Oh, I've got a couple hands. All right, so did any of you notice that when I introduced a local variable that instead of using var, it used the explicit type, even though I had var at first. And then if you notice, when I extracted the method, it gave this the explicit type instead of var like I had initially. I see a couple nods. So the reason for this is that we've actually implemented code style for Visual Studio Next. So we have code style enforcement and sharing. So if I go to Tools Options, can I get this all to show? I guess not. All right, so you can see that there's a bunch of different style rules defined here. And we can look under var, for example, and we can see, I zoom in, that, for example, for var, for built-in types, I made it so it's an error. So your code will not build if you use var for built, if you use an explicit type instead of var for built-in types. And the reason why in that generated code you saw that I was not using var, I was using explicit type, is because when the variable type is a parent and elsewhere, I have it preferred the explicit type. And so that's why in all my generated code, whatever you say is your code style enforcement, we're going to apply that to generated code. What was that? Right, so the question was, can we check in these rules so that everyone on the team can use them? In preview 5, you cannot, but what we're doing for RTM is we're going to extend a thing called editor config, so it's an open source file format. Right now it's used by a bunch of different editors to enforce 6 basic formatting rules. So what we're doing is we're extending that to also enforce these style rules. And so by RTM, you should be able to make this editor config text file, set it for these rules, and then check it into source control and share it with everyone on your team. And so as long as they're using Visual Studio or an editor that has these analyzers and can enforce these settings, then you should be able to do it. Yeah? Yeah? Yeah?
Is this intended to replace style
code? So what we're trying to do is do live code analysis. So we actually have people. So one of the points I was going to get across is that all of these refactorings and analyzers and code fixes, because of the third party or because of the API service that we provide on top of Roslyn, anyone can write them. And so we have people in the community who have completely rewritten, I think, most of the StyleCop rules as these Roslyn analyzers. And the ultimate dream for this editor config file is that you would be able to configure and share custom analyzers through it as well. So for RTM, we don't think we'll be able to fit that in, but you'll be able to do these style rules that we have. But the dream down the line is, yeah, to make it so any custom analyzer that you write, you can configure with this single file. Yeah.
How does performance of a lot of these refactorings compare to ReSharper?
Compare to ReSharper? Okay, so the question was, how does the performance of these compare to ReSharper? I personally have not measured them, but I know that a lot of people who have installed ReSharper are experiencing performance problems. We're not entirely sure why. It's probably because they like hijack some of the things we do. And so what we've done is now we try to take some of the things that people have said that they need and we put them into the into the box. So anything that's in the box should be pretty performant. Yeah. Okay. Is there any more questions? Oh my goodness. Okay. Yes. The far. Yeah. Okay, so the question was, instead of just showing an error, is there a way to make it automatically apply a fix? Not right now. It's something that we want to do. It'll probably make it in the update cycle for Visual Studio Next, where we want to do like single-click code cleanup. So you, if you're like on your team and you want to use var because you like var and screw explicit types, you know, and so you're just going to type all your code with var, then you should be able to, in one click, just have it automatically apply all the formatting rules your team enforces, fix all your vars to explicit type, make it use the framework type if that's what you want, et cetera. And so in one click, it'll just fix all your code style to make it adhere to your rules. Does that answer your question? Yes, so that's what I was trying to show was that when I did the extract method, for example, it used the, oh yeah, so the question was, if I do a refactoring, is it going to adhere to my code style rules? And for the ones that we write, it definitely will. I'm pretty sure for third-party ones, it will as well. And so, yeah, that's what I was trying to show when you extracted a method. I had var query equals the stuff, and then when I extracted the method, it changed the var to the explicit type because of this, these two settings right here. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, one more, and then I'm going to move on.
What's the time frame for VS Next?
For VS Next, what's the time frame? When it ships. That's a good answer. When it ships. Yeah. I actually don't know. That is a question for my boss. All right. So without further ado, let's move on. Okay. So that, as I was saying, those are a bunch of the refactorings, the code style enforcement that we're trying to add. And it's all thanks to Roslyn that we're able to do these things. So we're able to add, like, we have a coworker of mine who on weekends, just for fun, will write a new refactoring. And that, like, wouldn't be something that was going to be possible in the old compiler. But now we have Roslyn, this kind of stuff is easy. I mean, so easy, you can write one yourself if you want. So there we go. All right, let's go back to slides. Okay. All right, so that I showed you a lot. So the things to take away, we have in-the-box refactorings, we've improved navigation, so we have go-to implementation, we have that new go-to design, and we redesigned final references. We have smarter IntelliSense, we now have filtering also in IntelliSense. We have configurable and shareable code style coming in Visual Studio Next, RTM. And then we have the ability for you to create custom analyzers where if, you know, for example, the Azure SDK team, for example, doesn't want you to use date time now because it causes a lot of issues. And so they basically wrote their own custom analyzers using Roslyn. To basically make it so if you ever use daytime now, they're going to put a big old squiggle under it and be like, don't use this. So if you also are a proponent of no daytime now, maybe you should install that NuGet package. So you can also ship all these analyzers as NuGet packages so your team can just download them and get all the benefits. For those of you who are so inclined and want to know the list of the majority of all the features that are in Visual Studio 2015 and in Visual Studio Next, here is a really boring long list that I'm not going to go through. The main thing I just want you to see from here is, like, if you can see the slides later, there's C# 6 and VB 14 are supported in Visual Studio 2015, and C# 7 and VB 15 are supported in the next version. So with that lovely guide into the next topic, we're now going to do a brief refresher on C# 6 and VB 14. So how many of you are familiar with the language features here? Okay, so kind of a handful. So a refresher seems like it might be a good idea. All right, so let's go back to the code. All right, so I'm gonna use Control T. I'm gonna type contribution. I'm gonna filter by files, and voila, you can see there are my three files that have contribution in it. So using the feature in the demo, I'm gonna go to this. And in here, I just want to write a method that is just going to return a string that just has some pull request information in it. So I just call it print info, blah, blah, blah. So I'm gonna have it return, and I'm gonna do what we used to do. So string.format. So I'm gonna wanna put the type in here, and then I'm gonna put the title here, and then I'm gonna put the author of the pull request here. So that will be type, title, and the user's login. Whew. All right, so that is what we do today, string.format. Let's do better. So C# 6, we now have string interpolation. So what this works is all you have to do is click a dollar sign, so prepend a dollar sign to your string, and then now when you type an open brace, you can see that the colorization changed, and that's because we're now going to actually allow you to type code inside this hole of a brace that you put in. So now I can just do type this. We're going to put the title here. And then by the author. Whew. And look at that side by side. All right, so it seems like the most basic feature of all time. But I was joking with my coworkers at the booth yesterday that this is like the feature why I won't ever go back to C# 5. Because once you use string interpolation, there's like no going back. Like no way are you ever gonna type string.format ever again. So embrace Visual Studio 2015 and C# 6 because oh, well, excellent question. The question was, is there a refactoring for this? I just may happen to have one. oh, wait, I deleted the wrong one. if I go here, I'm like, oh, wow, look at that. Convert to interpolated string. Oh my goodness. Coming to you and Visual Studio next. Yes, you knew all refactorings file-wide or solution-wide. So another thing that happened, so a lot of the C-sharp 6 refactorings that are the next one that I'm going to show you is actually implemented as a third-party NuGet package. It was actually written by my coworker Dustin Campbell. It's called C-sharp Essentials if you want to use it. And the whole purpose of that package was to help guide you to new C-sharp 6 features in your code base. So you can see here, if you look kind of closely, that the return and the braces here are faded out. And that's because you can use an expression-bodied member here. So expression-bodied member is where you can truly make a one-line method one line. And so you can use this equals arrow thing to get rid of your return, get rid of your braces, and now truly make a one-line method one line. And so it's basically just a stylistic preference, but if you have a ton of one-line methods in your code base, we can just completely reduce the size of your code base. So C-sharp 6 and VB 14, the primary focus of that language design is to help make your code more readable and more compact. And so that is what we're just gonna show. So let's go here. We can see that this file is 108 lines of code. Cool. So now we're just going to C-sharp 6 this thing. So we're going to go here. We're going to use expression body member, do it everywhere in the document. We're going to apply it. Woohoo! So that just got rid of some lines. We're just going to delete these spaces, because why not? What else can we do? We can make this into an expression body member. It wasn't in the refactoring. Dustin needs to update it, looks like. So we'll add that. Delete these lines. We can also make this one into an expression body member. Why not? Have it go here. Delete this. And come back over here. What else is in here? Oh, I can make this one into an expression body member. No. It's just a syntax goodie. Yeah, syntactic sugar. And so here we went from 108 lines of code to 85. So we lost like 23 lines of code. Not bad, not bad. And then, what was that? Oh, there was more place I could have done? Oh, I'm sorry. All right, so now we're in WPF, and how many of us see this all the time? Yeah, okay. So, this seems like a lot of ceremony going on here. Now they gotta check that it's null and do all this mumbo jumbo. So wouldn't it be great if we could simplify this to one line? And you can now, thanks to C-sharp 6, and that is with the null conditional operator. So if you look here, we have a question dot. What the question dot is doing is it's basically saying, is this member null? If it isn't, dot into it. If it is, return null. And so it allows you to just get rid of all this. Woohoo! So we just get rid of all that, and now we can just make this a single line. And we actually put this refactoring in the box for you so that you don't have to worry about remembering the syntax for this either. And now because it's one line, I mean, might as well just make it expression by member while we're at it. So there we go. And delete this. And now what have we done? We've made this from 108 lines of code to 78 lines of code. So we got rid of 30 lines, and I don't know about you, but I think this is a lot more readable and less intimidating. And the last C-sharp 6 language feature I want to show you is how about this? How many of you have gotten tripped up by this? You have to type in the string name of your property here when you do raise property changed event. Has anyone ever messed this up? Yeah, all right. So, and this is the problem with it. If I rename display contributions here, it's not changing my string in here, which is a huge bummer. But we have a feature in C-sharp 6 called nameOf, and all nameOf does is return the string of the name of the variable they put in here. So now, if I do rename, it's now going to find it inside this nameOf. And so now you don't have to worry about ever again in your raised property change events having to like go back and find all those strings and make sure you updated them if you ever update your variable name. So those are the and then the last one you already saw where we do using static. Where did I use it anywhere in here? Oh, here we go. So I have using static demofodder.github stuff here, and because of that, I don't need to do this here. And so I can just simplify it. And so instead of having qualify get contributions, you can now see that my using static is unfaded, meaning I actually used it. And that is the last C# 6 power feature. All right, so that was a great refresher of C# 6. Any questions? Yes. Does name of work for enums? Yeah, it does. Yes, yeah, so I'll just give you the name of the enum. Oh, the expression by, okay, so we have a question about expression by members. Let's go back. Yeah, so the equals arrow syntax means you don't even have to put in your return in there. So,
it's just going to look at the expression and evaluate the return type.
Yes, well, you have the return type here. C# 6 and VB14, which I'll show some of these in VB14 in the next demo because we're there. Yeah? So the question is, when we simplified the delegate invocation, which I don't remember where I did that in here. I must keep scrolling over it. Oh, here it is. Okay. So the question was, when I do this, like, so part of the reason that you do the check for null is for thread safety. And so he's asking, well, if you simplify it down to this, like, do you still maintain the thread safety? And the answer is yes. Boom, the only answer, right? All right, cool. All right, so now on to C# 7 and VB 15. So the theme of C# 7 and VB 15 is working with data. So we're trying to make it easy for you to work with data in this, but then we also just have a bunch of like syntactic sugar in there as well. So let's just take a look at it in the code. So, all right, let's go back to our people, and let's start with tuples. So the value of a tuple is that it allows you to return multiple things at once from a method. So instead of having to juggle out parameters, all this stuff, you can now just return multiple things from a method using a tuple. So let's just, I know my boss, Scott Hunter, showed this earlier, but let's like one-up him by showing what we can do with VB and C# and all that stuff. Because he showed it with C#, but when you got the opportunity to do better than your boss, do it, right? I hope he's not here anymore. All right, so let's do a method. Let's make it a tuple. So we're going to make it return a person and a lightsaber. And we're going to call it get the gone. And it's going to return, we're going to make this expression by member. It's going to return a person called Qui-Gon Jinn. And we're going to give him a lightsaber that's green. Okay. So now we've created a method that returns a tuple. So you can see it returns two values. And it's returned, this is the tuple we have here. And it's returning a person and a lightsaber in the tuple. So now let's go to my VB over here. And now over here, I can make my Qui-Gon tuple, or I call it Get the Gone. Which, how many of you work on combined C-sharp and VB solutions? A couple of you? All right, so how many of you forget to like tab on completion in Visual Basic and you click enter and it like inserts a new line and like drives you insane? Yeah, well, okay, and Visual Studio Next, we made it so you can turn that off. So now you can make it not enter a new line when you press enter in VB, which is the only reason I'm succeeding right now. Okay, so we're doing this. I added this up top. So we have get the gone, and now I'm just going to print out. We're going to use string interpolation, of course, and we're going to deconstruct this. So you can see here in my tuple, there are two ways I can access the two things in it, or there is one way to do it, and that's item one and item two. So item one is the first thing in the tuple, item two is the second thing in the tuple. So I can do item one, and then so he has the, and then Qui-Gon. Qui-Gon tuple dot item two, saber, and then much excitement. Cool. All right, so the only problem is if you are a consumer of a method that returns a tuple, it's a hassle to say, like, what is item one? Go back, look over, be like, oh, it's the person, and then dot into it, right? So that is a hassle. So something that we allow you to do is when I can choose to label my different elements in the tuple. So I can say person, the first thing is going to be a Jedi, and the second thing is going to be a saber. And this is not changing the code at all. It's just kind of a syntactic sugar kind of thing. And so now, if I come in here, oops, wrong button. If I zoom in, you can see now I have Jedi and saber, which are human readable and understandable names, available to me here. So now I can say, oh, I want this to be the Jedi, and I want this to be the saber. And now this tuple is much more readable, and you can deconstruct it, and it makes sense.
Can the compiler pick up?
What do you mean? Like if I rename it?
Yeah.
Yes. So rename doesn't work in this preview for it, but it will by RTM. Yes.
I'm not talking about refactoring. So you go back and change the source, and then recompile, won't you get an error?
Right now?
No.
Yeah, well, right now, you have to rebuild everything, yeah. Oh, like you want me to change Jedi right now to Jedi Knight. Oops. And then you're saying over here there should be an error? Yes. It will not work. You can see here I got a red squiggle. Yeah. Did everyone understand that question? Yeah, okay, cool. All right, so that was tuples. So now let's go to pattern matching. And also, as you can see, string interpolation inside of Visual Basic. And tuples. So I just consumed a tuple in C-sharp in Visual Basic and was able to access all the different elements inside. All right, so pattern matching. Pattern matching is going to let you basically compare both the shape and the value of a type. So you can see here, right now, what I'm doing this printed form thing is, this is actually a much more condensed version of what it did look like, but you know, if you work with all compiler people and they look at your code, they just find ways to make it smaller and more beautiful. But normally what you're doing here is like, you know, you cast your person P as a student, check if it's null. If it's not, then you can dot in, you can officially do the cast and then dot into it, check the GPA, and so you do this all the way down this if-else stuff. But now what we're going to do, because we have pattern matching, we can just completely get rid of this and say if P is a student. So right now we're just checking the shape. So if P is a student, it's just checking to see if it's of type student. And we can actually name our pattern, so I can name it S, and then I can refer to it later by S down here. And I can just get rid of this local I had to make. And so I can do that here as well. So I can say if this is student, Stu. And then I need to actually change this, though. Oh, I forgot P. P is student Stu. And then down here, I can check if P is teacher T. And I refer to it down there. And I can get rid of this local up here. And voila, I have now pattern matched. So what this is doing is now you can see it's checking if P is of type student. If it is, give it the name S. And then you can dot into it and check its value. It does all the null checking, everything for you, and it makes this a lot easier to read. Now, if you do think that this looks kind of like redundant looking, or you don't really like if else's, you can also do this in a switch. So why not? So we can switch on P. And now when we do this, I can use Alt up, handy trick, to move a whole chunk of code up and down. And so now I can just delete all this, make it a case. Delete all this, make it a case. Oh, nope, that didn't work. Delete all this, make it a case. Delete all of this, and make it a case. And then make this my default. And then I just need to change the and into now the correct syntax is when to put here. And so now this is doing the exact same thing as that if statement. It's just a different look for it. And so now you can just switch on your type P. And so if it's a student and has a GPA of 3.5, it's an honor student, et cetera. And so that is what pattern matching looks like today, where now you can easily check both the form and the value of your type. Do we have any questions? What was that? No, not. OK, so the question was, can you use expression body members inside a case? And the answer is no. So I can't do like a. And make this one line. This will not like me. Yeah. So you cannot do this. Okay. What was that? Does it work on method signatures? What do you mean by that exactly? Not that I know of. I will defer to the compiler dev lead on this one. Do you want to talk?
You pass the argument as a both dynamic, then it works.
You said you've seen that work. So the question is, can you use pattern matching on different, or on methods that all have different like derivations, basically? And of the same base? And the answer is no. So we don't support it. It makes perfect sense to this gentleman. So we have a GitHub page where you can propose a new language feature and write up a nice proposal for it. And then I'm sure Jared and the rest of the C# language design committee will discuss it. All right, so that was pattern matching. The last one that I want to show you in here is local functions. So local functions are valuable because, like, say, like, for example, pretend I don't have any tests in here and printed form is only ever used in my main method. Like, why do I need to put this tiny little helper function right outside my main? Why can't I just nest it inside? And so that is what a local function is letting you do. It's letting you nest all these small little helper functions you write into your primary method. And when you do this, you can see there are various benefits. One is it will declutter your IntelliSense, but also, you can see here, let me just extend my main by putting my brace down here instead. Voila, I now have a local function. And now, because I have a local function, the biggest benefit, I think, is I can just shed parameters. Like, I don't need any of these now, and I don't have to think about them because I have P right here, and I'm just switching on it there. And so that is what local functions can do for you. So it just lets you nest small little helper methods inside of a bigger method. And the best part is it doesn't matter where you define it. So you can see that I am calling printed form before I actually define what printed form is. And part of the design for this feature was that you can actually just shove all these helper methods at the bottom of your main method, and it doesn't matter. Cool. So that was C# 7 and Visual Basic 15. So you saw tuples in VB 15 and C# 7, and you saw pattern matching and local functions as well. We don't need to go through this. Keep going. All right, but we did not talk about ref returns and value task of T. So these two features are really only applicable if you are actually counting allocations and the amount of time you're spending in GC. So if you are not at a company where every allocation matters and you're actually measuring all of them all the time and you're measuring how much time you're spending in the GC, you probably can just like these features and you never have to worry about it. And so what ref returns do is it's basically allowing for the full composition of ref values. So you used to be able to have them as parameters, and now you can actually return them. So it's completing that. And then value task of T is basically just allowing you, if you're only awaiting some of the time, you're going to get a performance win by using value task over task. And again, we had like some companies talk to us that were actively measuring the number of allocations and the amount of time in GC, and they were like coming to us with these numbers, and that's why we implemented these features to give them those performance wins. And so if this applies to you and you are actively measuring this stuff, then I would consider looking into these features. All right, so now on that segue of performance, let's talk about performance in Visual Studio. So how many of you work on large solutions? Oh, a lot of you. Okay, that's like almost half. All right, and how many of you can resonate with this quote up on the board? Yeah, all right, yeah, unfortunately, okay. So it basically says performance is the biggest issue with Visual Studio. It takes an actual minute or so to start VS, and similarly, loading projects can be painfully slow. So what we've tried to do in Visual Studio 2013, Update 3, and in Visual Studio Next is address these problems that you guys are having with performance. So the great thing about Roslyn is that we are always checking your entire solution to find all your errors and all your warnings and report them to you. But that is also the downside, that we are looking at your entire solution. And so if you have a huge solution, we are constantly running live code analysis on that. So something that we did in Visual Studio 2015 Update 3 is we actually turned this off by default. So it would only run live code analysis on your open files. And so if you want to turn it back on and you're using Visual Studio 2015 Update 3, you need to go to Tools Options as shown on the screen. And enable full solution analysis. So full solution analysis is kind of an ambiguous name, but it just means Roslyn is constantly analyzing your solution and reporting errors. Yes? The question is, do you have to do this under each language? It's off by default under every language, so yes. If you're using VB and C# and you want this, you have to enable it under both options. Yes? So the question was, as I was showing you, if you do a refactoring and you have it applied to the entire solution, but you have this turned off, will it work? And the answer is a yes. Yeah, the answer is yes. So Roslyn is like super, I wasn't quite sure, but good thing I've got my coworkers here. So Roslyn actually, well, we're like smart and like behind the hood and can do all that. That's always the answer. Roslyn's smart. It's going to work. It's going to be fine. All right. So that's one. The next is CodeLens. So if you're on a super memory-constrained system and you have a large solution, turning off CodeLens might help improve your performance. All right, but hopefully most of these problems will be solved in Visual Studio Next, because we're going to move all of the full solution analysis and everything out of process. So it won't be on the main Visual Studio process. It'll all be running out of proc. And when we do this, you should not experience lags when typing or anything due to Roslyn ever. At least that's the goal. So we're moving these all out of process, so that should help a lot with performance, especially in these big solutions. And the other thing that we're doing is deferred project load. So those of you who have massive solutions and you're only working on like two projects in it, instead of like loading up VS and waiting like 5 minutes for it to load the entire solution and going to get that cup of coffee and taking that bathroom break, I'm happy to say, or sad to say, now you can't get that cup of coffee anymore. Because with deferred project load, it's gonna like load, it's like pay for play, as we like to call it, where it's only gonna load things at the time of need. So if you open one project and that whole thing, it's only gonna make you wait to load that one project the first time, and it's never gonna have to load it again. If you go through in Solution Explorer and open up every single project manually, then you're gonna have to wait up front for all of those to load. But the whole thing of deferred project load is that you only have to wait for the things the first time you access them. So if you are working on that large solution, it doesn't work. Yeah?
Would using the search load all
Right, so the question now is, okay, deferred project load isn't gonna load up all my projects, so does search and navigate still work? And the answer is yes, because Roslyn. Actually though, because Roslyn. And so we're able to navigate to everything for you behind the scenes, yeah. All right, so how much time do I have? I have 10 minutes. Awesome, I can try to demo this. It technically got checked in on Saturday as the official one, but I got this as Friday's build, so who knows? But we're gonna give it a whirl. All right, so I just need to go to tools. So I don't have a really big one on here, but you know, you have to wait for a two project one anyways. So let's go. Lightweight solution load, experimental, parentheses. All right, so now we're gonna exit out of this. I can go in here. That was person demo. Oh wait, I should have not closed Visual Studio. I was wrong. Okay, hold on. Sorry. If I go here, I close my solution. Sure. Oh, we didn't see that. All right. Now I go to open project or solution. I go to person demo. Open this. Boom! Whoa, no loading at all. Oh, no. You know, it almost worked. It almost worked. Well, it was worth a shot. Anyways, all right. So deferred project load. It was experimental. It'll work by RTM. Okay. So again, to recap on performance, we're now moving code analysis and other things out of process so that they won't interfere with your typing time. We're doing deferred project loads, so you only have to wait for things that you're actively working on at the first time that you access them. And if you do have a large solution and you want to figure out more tricks for how you can make your performance better, we have actually compiled a list of things that you can do. Some of them are like pretty elite, but if you are that desperate, there is a link in the bottom of the slide that will address some of those. Cool, so again, to recap, Roslyn is the future. It is making all code analysis, navigation, et cetera, way better. We can make you more productive. We can colorize things that we weren't able to before, so you can have a more productive and beautiful experience. It gives you lots of productivity boosts that are coming in Visual Studio 2015 and in Visual Studio Next. We saw C# 6 and 7, VB 14 and 15, which in themselves, they have tons of productivity boosts. They make your code more readable and more compact. And then again, we ended on foundational things, how we're really investing in performance to try to make your life easier working on large solutions. And before you go, for questions, check out these sessions by my coworkers. So if you want to learn about debugging, Casey has a great talk on that. If you want to look about web development, Mads K, the famous Mads K, who writes all those extensions you probably use, will be here giving a talk on that. And then there's also like deep dive into production debugging. So if you want to see related sessions, those are those. And then resources. And if you have any questions, please stand at the mics and ask them. We got about 6 minutes if you have any questions. And that's all.